Hi, this is Mary Santora, and you're listening to The Default Setting with Jess Falstick and Elizabeth Seaman. Enjoy.
To The Default Setting, where we find out what makes you tick, because we have ways of making you talk. I'm your host, Jess Falstick.
And I'm your co-host, Elizabeth Seaman.
Today, we have improv artiste, and just a really good guy and friend of the show, Mr. James Cotullo. How are you?
Doing good. Glad to be here. This is my first podcast appearance ever.
We are popping so many podcast cherries. It's insane.
At least, like, for, like, a podcast where it's, like an interview-based thing.
Be warned, I'm going to go through the rules. I always go through these, and they're not rules, they're more like warnings. Number one, we're not going to talk about the subject most of the time. We're just going to
We attempted, and then we just go off on lots of tangents.
Right, so it's not, don't feel like we're going to be grilling, because we're basically just going to be shooting shit. And then the other thing is, we're going to step on each other a lot, because there's a delay in the thing. So we'll just be, like, talking, and then all of a sudden, like, you'll go to say something, I'll be like, and, like, don't feel weird about that. Just keep talking over us until we shut up, and then that'll be...
That's how I do improv, too.
Yes.
I don't yes and. I just be like, I'm going to talk now.
Yes!
I go, yes, I do have the best answer, and you will listen to it.
Your default setting is tentative.
Yes.
Okay. So, has this been something that you noticed early on, or is this something you noticed later or recently?
I think it's something that I've always felt, but I think it's only something recently that I've come to terms that's like just part of who I am.
Yeah,
accept it.
That makes sense. And like, I'm almost 40, so it's pretty late to be figuring that out. But it just I've always I prefer other people to make the choices for me, and then when I need to make, especially big choices, like it gives me anxiety.
Yeah.
I don't like. I was thinking about this beforehand. Like, a thing that actually like makes me irate is when a decision's been made, and then like things go back to the decision process. It's like we know where. It's like my wife and I are like, hey, we're going to dinner, and this is where we're going. I'm like, cool, decision's made. I have plans. I love that feeling. But then it's like, oh, they're too full. We can't get reservations.
We're back in the
space. And I'm like, oh, motherfucker, we already did this.
Yes!
You put me back at square one.
Yes! I can't deal with my emotions aren't ready for this,
guys. It's a roller coaster. You were like so just ready to be like on the ride.
It's like you're part of the thing, like with decision making, like having other people make decisions. Like, what's your fear about the decision making? Like, the just being wrong or like making a mistake? Because then it sounds like when you have to like just if you've made a decision, you're okay with just writing it out. So I wasn't sure if you're actually like,
oh, once I make a decision, I'm like locked in.
Okay.
I lock in once, like I guess tentative. It's tentative at like a first step stage.
Okay.
But, like, once I'm locked in, like, if I say I'm going to do something, and it's actually something that, like, it bothers my wife, I'd be like, Marissa, I said I'm doing this show, and I have to do it. And she's like, you don't have to do it once you say it. I'm like, I said it. I'm in. I don't want to go back and make another decision, maybe. But it's just, like, once I'm locked in, I'm in.
So is it like, an uncompromising?
That phase. Is it uncompromising?
Yeah. Is that what you would say?
Like, once I'm, like, made the decision?
Yeah, or is it more like you feel obligated to that decision?
I'm definitely, I'm a big obligation guy.
Okay.
I'm a big rule follower.
Were you raised Catholic?
I was raised Presbyterian.
Wow,
so,
okay. I know how they roll.
They have less hard rules, but they have a lot of just a lot of thought behind it, I guess. Mm-hmm. My dad was a pastor, so. And before that, I think it's actually, my dad was also in the military. So it was, like, a very military thing.
Dublin down.
Where like I was like used to my dad telling me what to do and my parents telling me what to do, and it's a very like rule-based thing. So like I love rules. I'm a big rule follower.
Okay. Which probably what is probably contributes. I never realized this until I started doing improv, how many fucking rules there are. So I don't know if that helps you or hinders you or...
Yeah, I don't know. Like, and I've always been drawn to improv, I think largely because I don't like being alone on stage, but I like being on stage. So, like, stand-up is very scary to me because I just feel like it's just me and I feel very exposed.
Yeah.
Versus, like, an improv or a sketch, which I also like to do, are very kind of collaborative efforts and I can lean on the people around me or disappear if I need to, feel like I could step into the background if I need to and then step forward.
Yeah.
Yeah, like people have, like, you get to, like, rotate who's got the shine. As opposed to, you know, so that way, if you're not, because when you do stand-up, like, if you're not feeling it, you're fucked. But, it's usually, I feel like, especially, I like doing teamwork stuff like that, too. Like, when my friend and I host panels at anime conventions, because we're big nerds, it's nice to, you know, like, somebody starts maybe, like, going off somewhere or something, and just, like, bring it back, or the other person flounders a little bit. Like, it's just... it's really nice.
That's why you're really good on here. That's why I love having you as a co-host, too, because you will jump in. You won't just, like, you won't shrink away. You'll be like, all right, I have a question, and I'll be like, shoot, I'm going to back up.
Okay, so now that we're talking about how awesome I am.
Yes.
Yeah.
What else?
How about you?
Oh, yeah, totally. No. Back to you, James. So, like, where do you think your anxiety's coming in, like, before the decision-making? Like, what makes you so indecisive?
I wish I knew. It's a very tentative feeling. One of my goals in 2020 is to start therapy. So maybe I'll find out at the end of 2020 after I go to therapy.
Hell yeah.
It's good to have a goal of something I probably should have been doing for like a decade plus already in my life.
The point is you're doing it. And
the point is that I've made the decision that I will do it.
Yes!
I haven't done it yet.
That's still an accomplishment. Yeah,
but it's actually really, it's really overwhelming because I don't know where to start the process of like finding a therapist.
Yeah. I mean, that's a really great point. I was fortunate in that I had a friend who was a, I want to say she was a psychiatric nurse and I was going through some rough shit. And so she had lots of good recommendations for like counselors and therapists and stuff. It does surprise me. And I don't know if it's just the nature of sort of the, I don't know if I want to say industry or practice or whatever, but like we have so many reliably good sites reviewing everything. And then when it comes to like doctors, therapists, whatever you need, like there really isn't a well-known site for like reviewing, you know.
Yeah, or they're not used that much. Like they're out there, but there's not enough people are using them, so you don't actually get an accurate idea.
Oh, you can't. It doesn't matter. You'll be like, that's the best doctor, but he's out of network, and I can't even go to him. I guess I'm stuck going to Steve.
Well, that's like, so for me, like, when it comes to therapists and stuff, like, if you've got friends who go and they find somebody really good, I'll ask for their recommendations, and then I'll see if they're covered. And if they're not, it's just kind of like, you go on your insurance's website.
Yep.
And then you kind of just Google them because they all have different like specialties and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it's basically what I plan on doing. I guess my company, like, they'll give you like a free like online thing where you can like have a web conference with like a therapist and then they recommend someone. So I'll probably do that.
Oh, that's perfect. I love
it. Sounds really nice. And then they'll definitely send you to someone in network. And we should definitely spend a lot of time talking on this podcast about the state of like medical coverage. That's a real fun conversation.
I think we all need it.
I mean, it's relatable shit. This is what you have been warned. This is the shit we do, is we go off on these tangents. I mean, so we had someone on the podcast that also kind of talked about, she was saying indecisive and you're saying tentative, which is, you know, really the same thing, but you know, hers was, and it kind of almost sounds like maybe this is where yours comes from too, like, when there's someone in your life that's always providing the dynamic of this is what we're doing, this is what they're doing, this is what we're doing, you're never left to be independent enough to have to make choices, to make, you know, make decisions. And, you know, you were saying your dad was in the military and all those sorts of things. So I think when you're never brought up to be independent, because that was a lot of me too. Like, my parents were extremely, or my mom anyway, was extremely like, this is what we're doing. So when I had the option to make choices at an early adulthood, I was like, I don't know what the fuck to do, because, like, I just never had to make choices.
I followed the path, like, up to college, and then I didn't, like, get a job right out of college, and I spent, like, a year unemployed because I just didn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. I, like, literally was like, how do you live after, like, I followed the path that you're supposed to follow, and someone should just give you a career, right? At this point, you shouldn't have to make a decision anymore.
What they act like.
And I'm kind of still in that position. Like, I have a job that I don't, like, have any passion for, but it pays enough for the bills, and I go to it, and it's just, like, I'm a mediocre enough white guy that I'll never fall that far.
Yeah.
But I never really made any that hard decisions from, like, that part of my life.
Yeah, like, yeah. And I think, you know, I think that's something that's really relatable. I mean, I don't know about, I think all three of us, Liz, you can attest to this, like, this, what I'm doing now, I kind of fell into. It wasn't even really a choice, you know what I mean? Like, it was just kind of like, it wasn't like I woke up one day and was decided, like, I'm doing this with my life. It's like, I kind of fell into it, and then I make, like, the bare minimum of right decisions to be able to, like, you know, keep my job, and that's about the extent of it.
Yeah, that's how I feel.
Yeah.
Just, I think it's fine. I don't really mind it. It sounds weird, but, like, I do have a job where I don't have to, like, since I don't have, like, a strong emotional connection to my job, I don't really carry it with me.
Yeah.
Like,
I'll say that. It's kind of nice.
When I log off, I log off.
Yeah.
Like, I'm done.
I work with people like that where it's like they're talking about, you know, like, oh, like, they could maybe, like, they've been there long enough, they could move up and stuff, but they're like, no, I like the level of responsibility I have now, and when I leave, I'm gone. Like, the end.
That's the thing. Like, I think a lot of people think they want, like, they want
super fulfilling that they care about all the time.
Right, well, they want the level of responsibility because they want the level of power that comes with you know, with all of that. It's just been my experience. Like, we just recently started producing films out here, and I'm the director in most cases, and it's like really
it's
like
a very LA thing to say.
I know, I have become such an LA douchebag.
How's your production company?
I'm such a douchebag. Well, no, it's good. We've only done, like, two films so far, and we're working on editing the second, so, like, it's not even out yet, but I directed the whole thing, and the thing is, we hired actors that, like, we've never met, and what's really, really scary about that is I have to be comfortable with, like, telling them what to do, like, I just notice every time I tell someone what to do, I'd be like, is that okay? Are you all right? Like, and I hated, like, the idea of, like, deciding what people got to do and not what they didn't get to do, because I was afraid that, like, they'd hate me or they'd be mad at me. And, like, there's that whole element too of just, like, making decisions for other people that's really overwhelming.
Yeah. And I also, like, and okay, go back to the thing. I didn't mention I'm a middle child, so that might be part of it.
Yeah.
I have a strong middle child energy. And, like, I had, like, an older brother, younger brother, actually pretty close in age, like, just 2 years between us.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just kind of, like, lumped into the middle, and we were just kind of, like, this group of kids.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we were always kind of treated as, like, I feel like we spent a lot of time just treated as, like, those three kids.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because it was just, like, we were a group, we were, like, just one ball of, like...
Three-headed monster, yeah.
Yeah, we were, like, the cartoon picture of, like, a cloud of dust with, like, arms and fists sticking out of it.
It's always, like, the kids. Like, in my family, we have, like, there's four of us. I have an older brother and two younger sisters. So even though I'm in the middle, it never really felt like it because I was the oldest girl. But it was always, like, the older two and the younger two. Like, it's just, you know, the two, in whatever way you can group them together. And, like, I swear to God, my family, for my sisters and I, they treat us all like we're the same person. So every Christmas, like, my extended family, uncles or whatever, we get gifts. It's the same thing in three different colors every year.
My parents do that.
All the time.
Like, me and my brothers. I don't think my mom.
Different colors.
I don't want to crap on my mom, but she's not great. Like, I think she, like, kind of gave up on giving gifts to her adult children and only cares about giving them to, like, her grandchildren, which is fine. But it's just, like, here's the same shirt for you and your brothers and, like, a pair of, like, pajama pants. Like, Like, I have, like, a stack of them from Christmases in the past.
That's what I'm realizing is the one advantage about my brother and I never having kids is that she doesn't have grandkids to dote on, so she still dotes on us like crazy, and it's fantastic. Like, I don't experience that at all.
No, it's just, like, it's all about the grandkids. It's just, like, all right, let them go. And then, because I have, both my brothers have kids. I don't, so I'm also, like, the overlooked one without a kid. So, like, at this point, I'm almost invisible to my family because I don't have grandkids.
I mean, I've always kind of been a little envious of, like, families that, like, do have, because I've always wanted to be cool aunt without, you know, like, so that I can have the kids without having the kids. But at the same time, yeah, at the same time, like, my brother and I are a lot of the same person in the same way. So I get why he doesn't want to have them. And it's, yeah, so I don't know. Do you enjoy being the cool uncle or...
I did. For a long time, I did. I have noticed, like, the oldest of my nieces are now starting to reach, like, pre-teen age.
Oh, fun.
And they're starting to just not care about anymore. Yeah. It used to be when they'd see me, it was like, oh, cool. Maybe because I don't have kids. It's like, oh, the fun uncle's here. And I was like, the fun uncle.
Funkle.
And now it's like, oh, James is here. I'm like, I'm so cool.
You can't call me Uncle James anymore. Okay. But you know what? It's gonna go through. It'll cycle back.
That's what I was gonna say. Yeah.
It cycles back.
Yeah.
Well, on my wife's side, her brother and his wife just started having kids. They had one a couple years ago, and they're having another one. So I guess we'll go through that cycle again.
Mm-hmm.
A little more local because they're in Cleveland, so we'll be able to be cool uncle aunt uncle again.
Well, and then by the time they get to their preteens, the other ones will be cycling back and asking you for life advice.
Exactly.
Oh, man.
Drinking shit.
They should probably not ask me for life advice.
I mean, has anyone ever come to you for advice? Would that feel like, okay, all right.
No one should.
They'll want to come to talk to you about things that they don't want to talk to their parents about.
Yeah, and I don't want to talk to them about that either.
Give them the dirt on what their parents did when they were kids.
I could do that, probably, but I don't know. It's just the idea of, like, guiding a child, maybe it's part of the tentative thing, but that gives me intense anxiety, the idea of a young adult coming to me and asking me how they should live their life.
Because
I still don't know how I'm living my life. It's just, like, I'm taking one day at a time, managing it.
I think that in and of itself is an encouraging thing. Like for younger people, like I have like people in my circle or people that I've met that are, you know, 18, 19, 20. And, you know, and they'll occasionally sort of ask, you know, not deep life questions, but they're just kind of trying to get a feel for sort of like what's it like to be, you know, in your 30s, late 30s, whatever. And I think it's encouraging to them to see like, you really don't ever figure it out, or at least you still pretty much feel like you're, you know, unsure and flailing. Like, it's on one hand, it's probably terrifying because it's like, oh, I'm never going to not feel this way. But on the other hand, it's kind of like you don't have to feel the pressure because, like, it's a human thing. It's not an age thing, I guess.
I'd see that. And I swear, I think it's easier when they come to you about stuff because it's always easier to give good advice than it is to follow it. Sure. Like, if they come to you some kind of question, it's like, oh, yeah, legends, like, you know what you should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
You should be taking care of yourself, and you should whatever, but, you know, doesn't mean you do it, which is fine. Like,
yeah.
I'll tell you what to do. I know how to lose weight. Did it stop me from eating a Cuban slider and some fried pickles last night? Not even a little.
Nope.
Yeah, you understand the theory.
Yeah.
Of losing weight.
You can always help them with the theory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Don't practice what you preach.
You're a scientist, not an engineer.
Exactly. Like, look, you can
Google it. Yeah.
Google it. Whatever it doesn't give you, bring it back.
I just love that, like, you're sitting with younger people, and you're basically doing the equivalent of, like, here, let me Google that for you. Like, you're not even giving them an answer that you personally know. You're just kind of like, here, let me Google that for you.
From what I've read, this is the facts of life.
Yeah, that's my understanding. So when it comes to, because, I mean, you've gotten this far, you're functioning, you've had to make some choices, like major life choices. Like you got a dog, it sounds like.
Yeah, she's freaking out. The mailman might be here. She was sleeping at my feet for a while. It's very charming.
She's protecting you, yeah.
She probably thinks she is. She's definitely, she's like a shepherd, so she definitely has, like, the sense that, like, we're, like, a dumb flock, and she needs to, like, take
care. Well, she helps make decisions for you.
Yeah, she does.
She does. She makes strong decisions. She does not worry about her decision-making at all.
No, she just makes them.
It's mostly, like, there's something outside, there's something outside, there's a cat, there's something I need to chase, I'm hungry, feed me, give me a walk. Very simple decisions. That's what I like about, actually, it's what I like about animals, is that, like, I like owning an animal because it's like, oh, it also gives me structure. I'm a big structure guy. So, like, I wake up, I walk the dog. I really thrive on that kind of structure and in giving myself, like, a schedule. I think, like, completely unstructured time can be, like, it could be kind of daunting to me. Like, some people like having that. And I like having, like, some lightly structured time where I have, like, some of that, you know, alone time, lightly structured, but, like, I need to have, like, a plan. Like, even when I have, like, a whole day to myself, I'm like, well, I'm going to do these chores, I'm going to go to the store, I'm going to hang out, I'm going to do some reading for an hour. Like, it's, like, even, like, I'm scheduling even my good times. So it's, like, and then I'll watch 2 episodes of TV and go to bed, and then, like, it's time again, and then I'm done.
Yep, I was literally just telling Elizabeth our plans for the day. I was like, I'm going to go get my hair cut, then we're going to come home, we're going to make a blanket for it, we're going to watch TV. Like, that is 100% me, is even though the whole day is downtime. Because I do, I think it helps you focus. Like, first of all, it eliminates uncertainty and the potential of having to make more choices when you've got, you know, a layout for the day or the week or whatever. But, like,
especially if you have to shoot from the hip on them, what do we
do? Yeah, it's comforting too to kind of know, like, I have set aside this time to do this thing, even if it is relaxing.
Yeah, it is.
Otherwise, so it can be like aimless, and then you end up doing nothing. That's what happens to me.
Yeah,
like, I just said, if I don't think about it, or it's like, if I say I was gonna do, like, I'm like, okay, well, I wanted to straighten up and then go to the store. And then, like, I fall asleep or something, and I, like, didn't straighten up, and I'm like, well, now I can't even go to the store because now it's all fucked, and or it's, yep, like, well, it's already ruined. And
yep.
Yes.
That's how I end up on Twitter for 6 hours if I don't structure my time, because I'll just stare at my phone and then, like, be like, what am I doing with my life? Why? Like, my boyfriend got home last night. I hadn't seen him in a week. And this morning, I get up this morning, and I'm on Instagram, and he's like, hi, and he's giving me a hug, and I'm like, Instagram. And all of a sudden, I realized, I was like, I haven't seen you in a week. What the fuck am I doing? And I, like, threw my phone across the room, and, like, I actually paid attention to him.
Oh, it's like, I feel that a lot. Like, just, if I have, like, that unstructured time, and it's, like, just sitting around, I'm like, what am I doing? And, like, I, like, get mad. I'm like, Marissa, yeah, we need to do something. What are we doing? What are we doing for time right now?
Self-loathing. Something goes up, and then it's like, I hate myself. And I'm like, well, what a waste of space.
Yeah.
Good job, you.
Spiraling.
Yeah. You said we were going to Target today, but now you're nothing, you useless piece of shit. Yeah. You could have gone to Target.
Yep.
It just turns into, like, a big old, like, self-hate fest.
Yep. Oh. Is Marissa good about, like, is she kind of, with, like, the opposite, where she can kind of keep you guys on task and makes a lot of those sorts of decisions?
Sometimes. I think she actually has some of the same things. We spend a lot of time asking each other what we should be doing. Like, most of our relationship is asking each other what we should be doing, but she's better about it than I am.
Okay.
And I'm better at, like, I am good at, like, knowing what I need to do. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it's just, like, a coping mechanism of trying to get out in front of it, of, like, making those decisions and being like, this is what we need to do. This is the stuff I need to do. I'm also, like, I'm big on saying yes to things. Like, I don't know what to do with my own time. That's why, like, if someone asks me to do a show, I almost always say yes. If someone asks me to do something, I almost always say yes. And I think part of it's just, like, it's more fun. Just as a, like, a thing, like, but I would never think to do certain things on my own. Like, I would never, like, if you put out, like, a call on Twitter where you were, like, looking for guests on my podcast, I would never think, that's probably something I can do. It just wouldn't cross my mind. But since you, like, tagged me with, like, other people, I was like, shit, I'm going to say yes. Of course I'm going to be a guest on a podcast.
Well, you're an improv artist. Of course you're going to say yes. That's your thing that you do.
Yeah, and I was trying to figure out, like, how, like, feel like this tentative feelings I have works with, like, what I do when I perform. And I think part of it is, like, improv gives me a chance to make a lot of decisions that don't mean anything. So it's very freeing feeling.
Yeah. Okay.
It's probably the only time I'm not racked with anxiety in my brain the whole time is when I'm performing.
That's cool.
It's as close as outside. It's probably the close to, like, it's not, I don't want to say it's like therapy, because that's bullshit that people say when they don't want to go to therapy.
It feels freeing.
Yeah.
No, it's a coping mechanism. It's makes you feel better sometimes.
No, it's totally true. I feel that way about acting, so I totally get it. Just being in a zone where, like, you're just doing the thing that you enjoy and you don't really give a shit about what happens in that moment.
Yeah, and it's like I make quick decisions on stage, hopefully, if I'm doing it right, and it doesn't matter. Like, if I make the wrong decision, it's over in 20 minutes either way, and I don't have to go back and live with the consequences of that decision ever again.
Well, and the thing I love about improv, too, is the more things go wrong, the better it is. So even when you're making bad decisions, you're making good decisions.
Yeah,
because,
for the show, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, because that's, I did it for, like, 4 or 5 months, not nearly as long as you've been doing it, but that was the thing. It was like, even when somebody like myself would just completely fuck it up, if you have a good support system behind you, like, they figure out ways to pick that fuck up and just make it the funniest thing. So
yeah, I've never done improv. I feel like I would be like,
you should try it.
Why not? Yeah. There's a lot of opportunities.
Yeah,
I feel like I've never done it, but I feel like one of the things that like makes the improv bad is like when you do fuck up, but you're like not aware of it in a way where it's like people are like just writing out like an awkward situation, like, instead of like acknowledging it sometimes and just like laughing or making it, now we're just gonna get stupid with it or something. Literally just like, no, still doing this
there's
thing.
A lot of rules. I was really surprised. Were you,
I didn't even know that.
How did you get into improv?
It was actually, like, when I was a senior in high school, I was in a play. I was in a version of, we did a production of MASH, and I was, like, had a role in that. And just another kid in it was doing improv with a local group, like a local, like, nonprofit arts group. And I started hanging out with him and going to shows, and then I started doing the shows, and that's kind of just how it started. And then it's just, I've always done it. Always enjoyed it.
So you've been doing about what, 15-ish years? 10?
20.
20? Okay. I'm terrible at math, and I know you said you're almost 40, and I was like, I'm gonna go.
No, yeah, I would have been like in high school, but I mean, it's not the whole way through, but after high school I started doing it more, you know, like more in a focused way, like doing regular shows, doing training, like taking some classes, things of that nature. Before that, it was like, I just like going to the shows and getting on stage and more of like a non-structured thing. But
winging it, yeah.
And then we're doing that, and we're also doing a lot of sketch work around that time. So it was like a lot of sketch. I really love doing sketch comedy. It's probably my favorite. It just takes so much. I think it's just so time consuming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's like it's basically like all the pre-work of like stand up, all the writing a stand up and putting on a play and like all the performance of improv all in one thing. And it just takes a lot of time, and it's tough to do it with people because people's lives are always in different directions, where improv, you can kind of just rehearse occasionally. I mean, I don't want to make it sound like you shouldn't rehearse, but you don't always need everyone all the time to do it. You can do it in smaller groups and other ways to make it work.
So are you doing improv and sketch these days, or are you leaning more into sketch?
I've been doing both. I've been doing more sketch, working with a group called Pop Cleveland. Pop Cleveland plug for the show.
Cool.
So it's okay if we plug my show, right?
Dude, I want you to plug. Dude, I always encourage everybody to plug everything they have to plug. So
I'll be plugging away. Before the end of the thing, I'll be plugging a lot of things.
Yay, good.
Plugging away.
Yay.
But yeah, we do sketch with them, and we'll be doing shows at Hofbrau House coming up here.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. So if you're in the Cleveland area, it'll be Thursdays in February and March, except for, I think, the 20th. There's one random day that they had something else going on there. Okay. Which is, it's like a weird, I feel like I've been doing things in like cycles, because I started doing improv above a bowling alley, and now like half the improv shows in Cleveland are now in the halls, so it's like just built doing shows at a bowling alley.
Yeah.
And then I the classes I took when I moved to Cleveland were, or actually before I moved to Cleveland, were at the Hermit Club, which is where the Hofbrau House is now.
Oh, and now I'm back doing
shows there.
Okay, so like the sketch shows, it's not like in the main thing, it's in the...
upstairs.
Oh, I've never been up there.
It's a cool building. I'm way into this building because it was like this, like the whole, like that part of the Hofbrau House is old because it's part of an old club that they built the Hofbrau House around. So yeah. It's like this weird building where it was just like a clubhouse for these performing arts nerds, basically.
Oh.
And then they have like wood carved, like they call them the hermits. So they have like these wood carvings everywhere of all the hermits and stuff.
See, that sounds nicer than going into, like, the main room, because it's, like, I like their beer, and I like having, like, the giant beer, and that's fun, but then, like, when I go into that beer hall place, I'm just, like, I tell everybody this, it's like you're walking into a joke about white people.
Yes!
Oh, like, you're
physically walking into a joke about white people.
Yes, the shot skis, and, yep.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
The one time I was there on, like, a Friday night, it was so loud, and it was just like everyone from like Wycliffe was there or something at once, and I was just sitting there trying to talk to people next to me, and the people behind me were like standing on their chairs doing and it was just like the flattest white ass in like khakis, like,
and they're everywhere.
This guy's like pleated khaki ass was just like hitting me in the back of the head. I'm like, have a beer, I'm going to Becky's, guys. I can't deal with this anymore.
Oh, my God, Becky's. That's the thing. I always, whenever I go to Hofbrau House, I go to Becky's or vice versa. That's, like, the only time that's my whole routine.
I've never been there.
Oh, my God, Becky's. Like, Becky's is actually where we were the night the Cavs won the championship. Yeah, that was actually amazing. And well, it's funny because we went to Becky's, and then at halftime we went to Hofbrau House. And then when it was, like, the 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter, we walked down to Romo Fiho or whatever it is now, and it was the Q back then, kids, and we went down there and we just like watched the game outside the Q
on the big screen.
Yeah, on the big screen, and then I literally ran around hugging, high-fiving, just like, yeah, it was the best.
That sounds like there's so many people there.
Yeah,
that was no it, I was you can't I was go. I was in the arena when they won.
Cool!
We were in the arena at the watch party, it was amazing. And then we walked across the bridge back to Ohio City after that. People were like hugging and high-fiving.
Yes!
It was also like, if you remember, it was like 1,000,000 degrees. It was hot as hell that day.
Yes!
And like people were hugging me, and it was just like covered in other people's sweat at the end of the night. And, like, cops were, like, high-fiving.
Yeah!
Like, the coolest Cleveland cops have ever been. I remember, like, seeing a guy, like, climb on top of a bus and start dancing.
Yep, yep.
And then I realized that I knew the guy on top of the bus. I'm like,
what idiot? Oh.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
Hey,
yeah.
Jim. How's it going? Jim.
That seems, now it makes sense.
Well, it's funny because I remember watching the people dancing on the fire truck. And I remember, like, cops were just supervising them, like, dancing on a fire truck. And I was like, what kind of...
Like, your system, kids.
I know.
That was the coolest the cops have ever been.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
They must have just been in a good mood, but because usually they're not that cool.
Well, I will say, like, that night, like, everyone for the most part, like, was being, like... People were being good. Yeah. The only thing I remember, like, that was kind of out of line was somebody smashed a cop car window, I think.
Like a bus stop or something.
Yeah, like, other than that, well, no, so what I remember about bus stops is we went to the parade, and the parade people were climbing on top of the bus stops, and they were caving in, because they're not meant to support people standing on them, and so, like, people were getting injured and shit because of the bus stops, but yes, that was the greatest night I think that Cleveland will ever have. Are you guys big basketball fans, or were you just like me, where you just wanted to be like a part of the...
Oh, no, no, we're season ticket holders.
Oh, cool! Ooh. I didn't know that.
Yeah, we go to a ton of games.
Aww.
We even watch right now. We're there watching like the bad basketball. Bad basketball here.
So you're loyal then, yeah.
So bad. I just like going to the games. I'm a big sports fan. Even though I'm like a shit athlete, like I can't do shit. Like, people assume, like you have to like be good at sports or have been good at sports to like it, but I really enjoy it. Like, yeah. I don't know. I like watching people who are good at shit do their shit.
Yeah.
Right? I get so proud about, especially new people. When the like the rookies come in, I'm like, oh, and they're like, their parents are here. They just made this touchdown. I'm like, oh. Or the Olympics. The Olympics makes me cry.
Oh, shit. The Olympics are coming up, aren't they?
They are, yeah.
I'm super into the Olympics because it's also the only chance I get to see weird sports. I love weird shit.
Weird shit is fun. Yeah, like
was it the first year with surfing this year? I think.
Really?
Yeah.
Cool. Is it? It's summer.
That's weird, but you know.
No. Is it summer this year? Or is it winter? Okay, I couldn't remember which. I couldn't remember which one we were on. Summer or winter? Yeah, I love. It's funny. We don't have cable, and I haven't had it in like 5 years or something.
Same. I stream a lot of things.
That's
everything is streamable.
Not always legally, but I stream.
Yeah,
a lot
no,
of
that's
things.
For,
that's not important.
For Browns football, we've had to get really creative, and Adam's found like Reddit threads that have links to like people.
That, I was gonna say that's what my sister does. She was in Baltimore, and now she lives in Indianapolis, and so she'd always just like she finds shit from Reddit.
Yeah. Yep, and
yeah,
so
they like shut down a lot of those threads, which really sucks.
Yeah, and I get it, like you know, because
yeah, I get it. They're illegal. I get why they're doing it, but
well, and like I try to. It's a slippery slope for me because I try not to pirate movies. I try not to pirate TV because ultimately someday I hope to be doing those things, and I don't want to take food out of my own mouth. So it's a slippery slope into like stealing, you know, sports and music and all that kind
You'd
of shit
steal
too.
A car, would you?
Yeah.
Interpol
show up.
Did I need it? Like, how bad did I need a car?
Those commercials
also,
always
tell me what to do.
Those commercials always got me because, like, I remember being a kid and being like, yeah, but if it was as easy and low stakes to steal a car as it is to steal a song, I would steal a car.
Steal cars all the time.
If it
yeah.
was as easy to, like, do that as it is to download, you know, whatever fastball album I was downloading in 2002.
Fastball.
I would have totally stolen a car.
Yeah.
I would have stolen a ton of cars.
I just look at Matt. I'm like, I kind of want to steal one out of spite now. Like, you just couldn't tell me what I'm not going to do? Well, fuck you.
Fire Escape still slaps. That's all I'm going to say about fire.
Yeah.
Fastball. Yeah, no, I totally agree. I remember using, like, the illegal Napster. I remember using
LimeWire.
E-Donkey, LimeWire, all that stuff. And then I find it sort of the irony is, like, now all music
Wait,
is,
did you say E-Donkey? Was that one?
Yeah, so E-Donkey and E-Mule were both
ones. E-Donkey's not one I've heard of, so I just thought maybe I was making sure I heard that right.
Yeah, no, it was E-Donkey. It's funny because I thought I had made that up because it was, like, you know, 1998 when I was using it. And then I was talking with someone the other day, and I stopped, and I was like, was there one called E-Donkey? And they were like, yes! And I was like, okay, I didn't imagine that. I'm glad, because like, I really thought... I know, because they were just talking about it, and it just all of a sudden clicked with me. I was like, was there one called E-Donkey? Yeah. So, but it's funny, because now you think about it, and like, basically, the only music anybody consumes now is free, because they do it through like a paid streaming service. So like,
well, then it's not free if you're, you know...
I mean, but the thing
and
is,
I feel guilty about that, because it's like... My favorite album from last year. I didn't buy it.
Well, that's it. Nobody buys albums. Nobody buys tracks. Everybody just streams it from, you know, Apple, Pandora, Spotify, all that stuff. So what ends up happening is, like, musicians, they don't make money through music anymore because they're getting, like, 10 cents a play or whatever. And or maybe even less than a fraction of a cent during a play. It might be even less than that. So, like, now it's all about, like, merch and touring and, you know, all the other shit that you have to do to kind of make money. So like the whole thing about like, oh, you're taking money out of musicians' mouths, even as recently as 20 years ago, like really not much, you know, like it's kind of the same
thing. It's still the same. Yeah, and I feel bad, like we will buy, like Marissa in particular is really into like vinyl albums.
Adam
like she collects
too.
Vinyl.
Yeah.
So like we will buy for like our favorites and like the artists, like smaller artists, we'll buy the record or we'll go to the show you know, as fun as it is to go in for me at my age to like stand around a room full of like 20-year-olds and like
I'm the Oprah. I go to the back where like the seats are. I'm like, yeah, I'm short. And
where are there seats in the back?
Oh, sometimes. Sometimes they
the
have,
bar.
Like, the bar.
Yeah, to say the bar, yeah.
It's like, you can go down on the floor. You can go sit up there. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to go sit up there because I want to be by the bathroom, the beer, not have drinks spilled on my head, and, like, walk around to land an armpit smell. It's awful up there.
Adam goes to shows, like, once every other week, and he'll go and stand for like
because he's tall.
Maybe that's what it is, because he can see. My thing is, it's not even about seeing. Like, I don't give a shit about not seeing. What I give a shit about is, like, he took me to a string cheese incident show in Vegas last year.
You should probably like break up with him over
I
that.
Swear to God, I stood for 4 hours, and finally, like, and the show was still going strong. It wasn't like it was getting ready to wrap up.
I can't do the jam band thing. It's
He's like a huge fish in string cheese incident. Oh, yeah. And so finally I was like, I looked at him, and I was high and kind of drunk, and I was like, I can't. Like, I looked at him and I was like, I can't anymore, because it was like 1 a.m. and we've been standing since like 9. And I just looked at him, I'm like, I can't do this anymore. And he was like, oh, okay, do you want to leave? And I was like, yes, I want to leave. Like, my legs hurt, my feet hurt. Like, I can't stand that long. Right? I can't do it.
I feel old. I'm like, my lower back always starts to hurt.
Yeah.
Concrete.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's before the show even starts. Like, I kind of have to, like, psych myself up for a show.
Yep.
Like, to go to a show. And I like going. And, like, Marissa really likes going. So, like, I go to more shows now than when I was young, just because when it was just me, I'm like, I'm not going to any shows. Screw that.
Same.
Right. But it's just like, I got to psych myself up. So it's like, oh, we're going. It's 2 weeks away. I'm like, all right, I'm going to be out late that night.
Yep.
I'm going to be ornery the next day. Sleep in. It's at the grog shop. So it won't be over till 2 a.m.
Yes!
I work tomorrow. And so I'm just like preparing myself emotionally for all this.
He has stopped asking me to go because he knows that, like, that's how I am too. It's like, oh, I'm only going to get 4 hours of sleep and I'm probably going to be hungover. You know what I mean? Just all that shit.
No, I was just saying, I'm very different also because I don't like, I like going out, and I like socializing, and I like being around people, but it also, like, drains me.
Yeah.
So, like, some people, like, get energy from other people.
Yes.
I don't. I get energy when I'm alone, and I'm, like, recharging.
That is a classic introvert.
It's an introvert-extrovert thing.
Yeah.
So, surprise, you probably have a lot of introverts on your show, because you can pull from the comedy world.
Oh, yeah. That's the other one. We were talking earlier about we had to come up with, like, alternate words for things. People are always wanting to be asshole. People are always wanting to be introvert. People are always wanting, like, those are the comedian and improv, like, mentalities.
Yeah,
that are always...
yeah. You should, like, pull from, like, find a CEO, and he'll just be like,
yeah,
like, oh, my default setting is winning. And then you're like, all right, thanks, guy.
We have to wrap a little early this week. Is there anything you want to promote? And you got Pop Cleveland coming up. When is that?
Pop Cleveland will be Thursdays at the Hofbrau House upstairs from, I think it's runs through the middle of March. Then the...
I pulled it up. I got the dates.
Yeah.
It's February 6th, February 13th, February 27th, March 5th, and March 12th at 8 p.m.
Hell yeah.
There you go. Yeah.
Woo-hoo! I want to remember.
Tell everyone else to look it up. I also do This Improvised Life monthly. It's the third Wednesday of every month at the Happy Dog in the basement.
Fun show.
Ooh. It's a fun show. You've been there.
Just in general, I've been doing a lot of shows with Michael Bush, so you can follow Michael Bush, and I'm often on some of his shows as well.
People need to check out Michael Bush. I feel like the last 10 episodes we've done, somebody has promoted something he's done, has been a part of things that he's done, have, like, gotten into comedy and improv because of stuff
he's a mover and a shaker.
He is. I'm really glad to hear that. So is there any social media that anybody can go to follow?
Yeah, you could follow me on Twitter at James Cotullo. It's just James Cotullo. And on Instagram, I'm Dodge_Intrepid.
Perfect. Liz, you got any social media you want to promote?
There's Instagram sometimes.
Okay. Instagram sometimes. Elizabeth Seaman on Instagram. You can find me
You remember better than me.
Yeah, Epic Fall, Instagram, Twitter. And you can follow us at The Default Setting Pod on Facebook. I want to thank OK Pants and Above the Low Entertainment. And I want to thank James Cotullo for being amazing and being our guest today.
Thank you for having me, guys.
You guys are so much fun. Go check out all his shit. Okay, love you. Bye.
without them, I can't see anything. I have what they refer to as terrible eyesight.
Ah, that's a condition that affects many, many people.
I have to pay, and I pay like more to have, like, my glasses are always more expensive because I have to wear like the thick lenses, and then to make them fit and to have them fit into any frames that look okay, I have to get like the compressed lenses.
Oh wow!
They're more expensive because my eyesight is real bad. Ooh. I have bad genes. I have a lot of allergies, seasonal allergies. I've lost my hair starting in my early 20s. My genetics are just all over the place.
Think about if all those things were turned on their head, and you would have like won the genetic lottery.
That's like when I go to like a basketball game, I'm like, all these people won.
Right?
They're all like 6'6" is like considered a short basketball player,
right?
And they're strong and they're fast. And then you find out most of them are like smart and they like know about wine, and you're like,
yeah, that's my boyfriend. I tell him all the time, he has perfect vision. He's not allergic to anything. He has all his hair. He's 6'5". He doesn't have like any, like, I'm knocking on wood, but like he just doesn't have any like health conditions. And then he'll get like a migraine and be like, why, God, why? And I'm like, no, you do not get to say you are genetically gifted. You do not get to like curse the universe for having one minor affliction.
Yeah. That means you guys, I guess, have to have children. I guess
that's
you don't
what
have
I told him. And the thing is, I don't want to. But the thing is, I have perfect eyesight.
I feel like
eyesight.
You're doing the world a disservice.
Yes,
society.
I know.
Need more good, strong children, because a lot of the ones we have are bad.
I know, and that's the thing. I kept telling him, like, I don't want to have kids, but I have perfect eyesight. I don't have allergies. I don't really have like a lot of health problems at all.
You guys should just be a surrogate for like people with bad genetics.
Woo! That's actually really smart. I could crank them out, and then someone could just take them. Like, they could just take them.
Just set them up for adoption, just to get your genes in the mix. You know?
Exactly.
What I
keep track of
is
because I want my kid to get with your kid. I won't have to give extra money for braces.
Yeah, I didn't have to have braces. He didn't have to have braces. It's like all like a thing.
I think we're describing eugenics.
I know.
It's got a really strong history.
We're not killing anyone. We're just reproducing, you know, more of the ideal one.
It's like, you know how when you breed dogs, you want the two best dogs to breed, and it's just with people. It's the same thing.
We're not letting other people get it on. We're just saying if we had a preference.
Yeah. I mean, and that's really what evolution's always been about, right? Like, you're choosing mates that, like, you know.
Hey, that's what the eugenics people say.
Oh, God. There's not enough minorities on the podcast right now to be able to talk about this, so we have to change.
No, there's none on the line right now.
Yeah, there's none on the line, so we need to switch gears.